Today is a crypto day, and I want to go over, some general crypto tips and things like that. Nothing too serious. I mean, we've talked about different currencies, different altcoins, and we've talked about different other ways to really take advantage of your crypto. But there's still ways we haven't covered, and I think today's the perfect day for that. Really, the backlog is going to just be pretty much different things we've covered, and so that way you'll be a little bit more prepared of what's going to happen today. So things we've covered before is we've covered different altcoins besides Bitcoin in order to obtain Bitcoin. We've covered how some of these coins differ, and I think the coins that we were mostly focused on before were like Bitcoin, Litecoin, Monero. And that's really about it. So today I want to expand that point of view on altcoins, either to use to obtain Bitcoin, but also different ways to get to Bitcoin. So I do believe we even had a podcast where we talked about different social sites you can go to earn altcoins to then get to Bitcoin, but I never really explained where those places are to go up, to trade up, and how you really go about doing that. And the point is, you can go back and listen to the previous episodes and get a better point of view on what that means. But the point is, trading your crypto, it is one of the hardest things to do. Especially if you're day trading, swing trading, or marginal trading, which is, and a lot of times people consider marginal trading a scam. But there are other situations you might not be aware of that I want to cover that I'm not going to cover here. So be prepared to listen to some stuff about the trade platforms themselves and how they differ. And I'm not going to be too specific on any one platform, and I'm not going to get too technical on any one thing. So you don't have to worry too much, and as you can tell, this backlog is not very long. So let's just jump right into it. Okay, so really before I can tell you what altcoins and things like that, let's get into the actual platforms. I kind of dropped in a little bit on this with the backlog, and I really want to just not be too specific on anything, because there's dozens and dozens of platforms. Earlier on a different podcast, I talked about how there's tons now of smaller, little bitty exchanges with not a whole lot of liquidity, so you can still get some, trading going on, and you can really trade altcoins that are not available on some bigger exchanges that have much higher liquidity. In a lot of cases, for the people who would be listening, they probably don't have a whole lot of money value in these altcoins or a whole lot of money to buy coins. So this is in the right gear for you. And what we're looking at is there's a few types of exchanges you'll be doing. You'll be doing the non-custodial or custodial. But there's also a third type that not a whole lot of people have heard about, and it's reward trade exchanging. And I want to just talk about the differences here, because when you have a non-custodial exchange, basically you're holding the coins, they're finding you a party to transfer, to trade with, and then you guys actually perform the trade on your own. So the exchange doesn't actually hold your coins ever. Some of the non-custodial exchanges will actually allow you to do the trade through the website, which is how they make a percentage, and it's basically the only time they really hold anything. And even those exchanges nowadays, they perform it's basically the same thing as the bigger custodial exchanges, which is they have a pool of money, and you basically pay to that pool, and the other party receives from that pool. And this allows for both the receiver and the sender to perform their transaction almost instantaneously, even if they are not at the same time performing the trade. So what that means, like, okay, I'm going to trade with someone, they find me someone to trade with down in Zimbabwe, and the person in Zimbabwe, we're just going to, you know, automatically know from where I'm in America, that we have two different time zones. So I might perform, you know, we might find each other, we might agree to trade X amount or whatever, and then I send the funds that I, you know, that I'm giving to the other person, to the pool, and then that pool returns to me what the other person is going to send to the pool. And then when the person in Zimbabwe gets up or whatever, does their thing, they then send their funds and they make their receival. So the way this non-custodial pooling works is, if I make my trade in, I get my trade out instantly. So there's no waiting. Like, I don't have to wait. And if the other person doesn't put their trade in, they actually get punished by not being received their trade out either. And sometimes that punishment is complete denial, and sometimes that punishment is, okay, we're going to take an extra percentage from you because you didn't do this or you didn't do that. And I know that doesn't really sound like a non-custodial exchange, but that's exchanging pools. And there are such things as non-custodial changes where all the site does is list who wants what, and then you go through that list and then you actually perform the trade. And a lot of times those ones don't, you know, they're working for those websites, and those companies are strictly working off of tips. They're strictly not making money off of your trade, and that's why they're very popular. The exchange pools are not as popular just because it feels like a custodial exchange. And in some people's point of views, that is a custodial exchange. Now, what's the difference between a non-custodial and a custodial? Well, you kind of heard it a little bit, is in a lot of people's point of view, it's the fact that the exchange has a pool that you're trading to. But actually, it goes a step further than that. So the money you want to exchange, you have to put into the hands of the exchange just to be able to exchange. And so basically what you're doing is they have a pool of funds, but then they have like per individual entity that has an account, you know, that an account has a pool. And so you're putting your money into the account, your account pool, and then if your account pool has the amount of funds plus the fees and everything to do the trade, you can do the trade, and if not, then you can't. And many people consider custodial exchanges to be safer, even though custodial exchanges are the ones that are always getting hacked. Custodial exchanges are always the ones getting in trouble, exit scamming and things like that. So in my point of view, I'm exactly the opposite. I think custodial exchanges in a lot of cases are scams, just because so many of them are scams. And that's the reality of the situation. And if you're doing leverage trading, you're probably doing it on a custodial exchange, because that's actually how it's going to work. Is they're not going to actually allow you to do non-custodial leverage trading. It's just not as successful. There's too many people that take advantage of the exchange itself, and the exchange gets screwed and then has to shut down. And that actually upsets the community, even though a lot of times the community doesn't understand why they had to shut down. And so that's the only major differences. Okay, non-custodial, they don't hold your funds for you to trade. Custodial, they hold your funds in order to trade. And again, in custodial, you tend to have leverage trading as well. So what is the difference between those two and the more new type of trading or exchanging called reward to trade? And reward to trade is just the term I'm using. There is no actual terminology for this and this type of exchanging and trading, because what it basically means is that either they, well, at the moment, the only few that are doing this, they are a type of custodial exchange. And so you're putting your money in your account pool, and instead of the company having a pool of different funds, they just have a pool of their own token. And so when you are performing the trades, the the custodial exchange company actually automatically performs the entire trade between you and the other person, which does require, like, okay, it does require actions to be done either at the same time or in depth of each other. When in depth means in depth of each other, it's kind of like the whole Zimbabwe situation, except I go click trade this much, blah, 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 do all the stuff, click trade, and then I have to wait for the other person on the other end, you know, in Zimbabwe, to get up, do their thing, and click, okay, da-da-da, da-da-da, exchange, da-da-da, da-da-da, exchange. And what happens then is, okay, so I click trade, and I'm waiting on the other person, and rather I'm leverage trading in this situation or not, because right now we're thinking of like regular trading. As soon as I click trade to trade or whatever, I'm kind of given an allotment of the company's token pool, and that token that I'm being allotted doesn't actually get opened up to me until after the person on the other side does the same thing. You know, they finalize and allow the trade, and so then they also get an allotment. Okay, now the main companies performing a reward trade, they're actually using it for leverage trading, and what that means is that you're either shorting or longing a cryptocurrency by giving this company money into your pool, like your account pool. So you're putting money into the company's account pool for you, and then you're saying either it's going to go up or it's going to go down. You know, you do your leveraging, and you do your how much leverage you want and everything, and then you are getting the token for placing that short or placing that long. And if you have to adjust your position, either put more in or take out or whatever, you also, most of them are actually allowing you to take an additional piece of the allotted token amount that you are supposed to get because of your trade. And a few of these companies, because there's not a whole lot of them, but just a minute amount of the ones that are doing this, they have a secondary, they have like another feature onto this. So where when you go to pull your position out, you don't ever receive the money you put in. So if you put Bitcoin in, you don't receive Bitcoin back. You only receive their currency token back. So that does cause some issues and does cause some problems, because market manipulation is what a lot of people call it, but in this case it's going to be per exchange manipulation, can happen and cause you to lose money. So you go put in Bitcoin in, say you put half a Bitcoin in, and you say, okay, let's short it because it's kind of high and I expect it to dip. So you go to short Bitcoin, right? And Bitcoin dips and your short becomes profitable. So then you pull your profit out without pulling your half a Bitcoin out, just the extra. Well, instead of receiving Bitcoin, you're only receiving their token of that value. Now, what you don't realize is their token is being traded and leveraged against every themselves. You know, they're against their own market because they want their coin to go up in value, but it doesn't always. And there have been instances, even though this is still a roughly new system, where someone puts in a short, Bitcoin shorts, they go to pull out their profit, they receive the currency token of that exchange, and it's not actually worth the same amount as what Bitcoin was. Because, and I say that, it sounds really like, okay, but that's what they're supposed to do. Well, they take out their percentages and stuff, but at the same time, okay, so remember, you put in half Bitcoin dipped, you pull out your profit without pulling your half Bitcoin. But instead of getting it back on Bitcoin, you get it back in their currency, and then their currency dumps in value because someone somewhere short their currency enough that it caused a dip in value, or they sold off enough, or they had to sell you enough because of your profit that it dipped in value. Now you actually have less value for what you could have had if it was still Bitcoin. Other scenario that happens is, same thing, half Bitcoin in, it's short, you want to pull your profit, you get their token, and then before you can remove your short, it reverses. Bitcoin reverses, not theirs, but Bitcoin. Now the money you have in there on the short is actually worth more than it was before, and so you want to cancel that. Well, when you cancel that and you go, okay, I'm done doing that short, I mean, you have to take some kind of a loss. You're actually going to take a larger loss because you're not receiving your Bitcoin back. You're receiving their token back, and then you're not going to receive the amount of value of the, you know, what your half of Bitcoin is worth in their token. You're only going to receive the amount of value that half Bitcoin was worth when you put in your short in their token. So say you put in half of Bitcoin and it's 10 grand. You go short, it dips down to 5,000, which this actually did happen. This is a real scenario that someone had explained to me, which is why I'm telling you. And then it goes back up. It went back up to 7,001 to be exact. And when that person went to go pull, you know, it was at 6,500. So obviously it's gone up. They pulled their profit at 5. They received the currency token, not Bitcoin. That token dipped as Bitcoin went up. And then they were only received the amount of the what Bitcoin is worth when they put in, when they canceled their close, minus the amount they lost from the value changing because they were on a short, minus the fees and transaction fees and all this other stuff. And then they received a coin that was worth less. Yeah, they did receive a little bit more in that coin than they would have if they had just pulled out at 5,000 completely. But because the currency token they received dipped at the same time because it was leveraged with Bitcoin at the time, and the Bitcoin reversed, so their coin became worthless, or not worthless, but worth less value than it was before. They actually had even less money. So someone was able to take $1,000, put it into one of these exchanges, and then by the time they got done, even though they pulled profit out, they only had $750 worth in that token. And then they had to figure out a way to trade that token back to Bitcoin. And a lot of times these exchange tokens are not tradable outside their own exchange. And what that does also mean is that now that custodial exchange has full control over what value you actually have. They can actually tell you, no, you can't trade that token. And if no other exchange is willing to accept that token, you are stuck with an altcoin you can't use, ultimately. And then, so basically, your value goes from, like I said earlier, $1,000 plus profit to $0, including your profit. And this is another reason why people don't like centralized exchanges. This is why people don't like those types of systems. And, well, this leads me right into the same point as I had the other day, where decentralization always helps out. Because not only does it give more opportunity for more people, but it gives the individuals more control. Okay, so you heard about different types of exchanging, and I kind of slightly went over different types of trade, which there's only really two kinds of trading. There's trading and leverage trading. So if you are thinking that hedging is a type of trading, then just please turn around and go back and find out what hedging actually means, because that is not at all trading. So we're going to go into different altcoins and how to get those altcoins up, because you heard me explain one point, which was for this section, that some altcoins cannot be exchanged at all, and some altcoins can only be exchanged at very specific places that have absolute control over that altcoin because of this. So for example, let's go using a coin that I have that is a specific one that at one point in time had no trade possibility. Note blockchain NTBC. When I first got into NTBC, there was no way to exchange it. There was no exchange that would take it. And it was strictly a peer-to-peer coin possible because there was no trading on it. And now there's multiple places that actually allow trading on it. And some of them are actually getting, you know, bigger exchanges or accepting it. But when it was only available on one exchange, people were a little upset because the amount of liquidity it had was like $10 or $11 US worth in value of liquidity. When you could take your Note blockchain and try to get that $10 or $11 worth out of it. But in reality, you could only buy $10 or $11 worth of that coin at any point in time. And if someone went in there earlier that day and bought all the $10 or $11 worth, you were stuck waiting for someone to go in and try to start selling that same token, the NTBC, in order for you to be able to receive it. And it was a centralized exchange. So basically, someone had to say, okay, I want to give you this month these tokens in order for me to get something else. And the type of exchange it was, they were actually literally, they would go put their money into the pool, say, I want to exchange this. And then they were waiting for an offer, waiting for someone to come around and say they wanted to buy it. And the way that worked with this exchange was kind of nice in one way because I put $10 worth in, and if someone came up and said they wanted $1 worth, the exchange would allow them to do just $1 worth. And I, the only problem there was I didn't get paid until all of my coins were actually sold out, and then I got my payment. So as you can hear, there's still issues and problems around all of this stuff. And even though these tokens are tradable up, it can be very difficult. So that's one of the first things you look for. You need to find, okay, how many places can I exchange this token at? And is it worth the value to exchange that token? Sorry, you want to find, okay, where can I exchange this? What kind of liquidity do they have? And really, when you're looking at liquidity, you want to see if the liquidity is both directions. Okay, they have $10 liquidity to buy this token, and they have $10 liquidity to sell this token. Because if you have liquidity strictly for buying the token, well, that means there might not be liquidity tomorrow to sell that same token. And then deciding, okay, I have this token, I need to go up to another token that I perceive as more valuable. It doesn't always have to be more valuable at the cost average. And when I say that, what the dollar point is per token, but it can be, like I've actually taken coins that like Monero, for example, and bought what was considered a lower altcoin or a coin that wasn't worth as much, because I was able to receive a lot more of those tokens, and then those tokens were on a dip, and because they were on a dip, like I said, I received more of those tokens, and then when it reversed, because of actions, trade actions, like what I did, where I bought, I've actually gone through and bought entire liquidity of a token off an exchange, just so that way I could receive a ton of those tokens to help try to increase the value of that token, just to sell that token back to that exchange, as soon as it went back up. And so that is what we call wash trading, but that's a true wash trading. There's two kinds of wash trading. Most people you hear talk about wash trading, they're only talking about where you actually go to put in a large order or buy order, and then you cancel it before it is able to be met, before you're able to buy or sell those tokens. And so what I'm doing is a real true wash, and where it allows me to wash one token for another right back to the other token for profit. And so this is why we want to know, okay, well, how many exchanges, what's the value, does it have that value both forward and backward? And if you have like one token that's exchangeable on 10 exchanges, you actually want to consider the liquidity of half, or the average of all 10 exchanges. So you find out what the liquidity is between them all, and you divide it by 10, or by the number of exchanges, and again, I've got both forward and backward, in and out, buy and sell. And doing these processes, doing this little bit of research, it can also help you not FOMO in, or fear of missing out, so you sell off or buy at the wrong moment in time. And to be honest, that's a very common mistake amongst traders, that are just not, they don't have strong hands, as it's called, which basically means they don't have the ability to look at the past of that coin and say, okay, look, every time this coin hits at a certain point, it seems to be bought up because that's considered a bottom or a low, or and so all these tiny little things really matter. So you really need to do research per coin, per exchange. And then once you start doing research on exchanges, eventually you get to a point where it doesn't take very fast, doesn't take very long to find out this information. You could go to CoinGecko and look at the different exchange liquidities and stuff like that, and you learn these little things. But your tokens, if the token has a utility, they tend to bounce back. Let's go for a really old example, Namecoin. I actually made a card game for crypto, for actually it's for my kids to teach them how to mine cryptocurrency and trade cryptocurrency, back in like 2015. And Namecoin was one of the coins I offered on there because at the time it was been around for a few years and people considered it to be a hard altcoin, that would always bounce back. But let's get into reality here. Namecoin basically died just a couple of years later in 2017. And in 2018, I don't know anybody who would even allow Namecoin exchanging. I don't know anybody who even can get Namecoin anymore. It's to a point where Namecoin is dead. So why did it die? Well, Namecoin had some form of strange utility. There was a way to receive Namecoin from some websites and exchanges by basically giving your information away, KYC yourself and AML. And so people in crypto don't like that because that's the whole point of crypto is to not have to have your name attached to things. So, you're an invisible entity doing performing actions. And well, that wasn't 100% true. Places were just using Namecoin as a gift in those cases for you performing KYC or AML, and they were using the fact that it was called Namecoin as like a method to trick people. And even though that was the number one way that I knew that people were receiving this coin, it wasn't the actual way to receive this coin. There was other ways to receive this coin. And because of people weren't doing enough research, eventually people at one point were just buying Namecoin thinking, oh, well, it's got utility and it's got this, but it had no real utility. It had none of that. When you come down to it, what was Namecoin really being used for beyond that one exchange or those two exchanges that was offering that? Absolutely nothing. It had no movement action. It had constant stale blocks. And even when Bitcoin Cash, one of the first major forks of Bitcoin, not the first major fork of Bitcoin, where they didn't just fork the code, they forked the chain, and they fronted, if you have this wallet on Bitcoin, you have the same wallet on Bitcoin Cash and all that fun stuff. So they even have problems with stale blocks or empty blocks, blocks with no information. And because of that, people tend to say, okay, Bitcoin Cash is a dead coin, even though it's not. It's constantly going up in value, it goes down in value, it's being traded all the time. And over time, infrastructures were built around it, giving it actual utility. Like today, it does have some actual utility, just like Bitcoin SV, a fork of Bitcoin Cash, and again, not a code fork, but a chain fork of Bitcoin Cash. It too now has utility. There's Twitch app, which is an app that you can use to spend or use your BSV as a social system. And even before Twitch app, tons of the Bitcoin SV blocks were stale, and it was considered a dead chain at one time. So when you have these situations, you've got to really pay attention to your token. You've got to pay attention to the exchange. You have to pay attention to what you have at hand. Now, I didn't actually want to sit here and name off tokens that you could use to trade to other tokens, but I just wanted to give two major examples in trading. From the token point of view, and I wanted to give different examples of exchanges from that point of view. Because with that little bit of information, you should be able to take information you can find, do some research, and make educated guesses, in this case, or educated choices of what to do, where to trade, or who to trade to, up and down. Just because you can take a crypto and trade for any other crypto doesn't mean you should. You should really look at its history, its past. You should look at information. Is it have utility? What utility is it? You know, you don't want to have, for example, a coin that, like, let's go with Bravo Coin. Okay, Bravo Coin is distributed through the Bravo app. I do believe it is tradable, and it's tradable on a few exchanges, and so you don't really always want to take coins like that and trade down to them. If you have a higher worth value coin or coin that's worth more per token, you don't always want to trade down to something like that. But at the same time, if the Bravo app is getting tons of users on ramping, and they're very active community and things like that, you might think about doing that, right? Exactly. And so just the small difference of, okay, well, this app that we're receiving this coin from has, you know, increase in customer use or increase in user use, and its traffic is high, and that causes you to go, okay, this has a utility. And at the same time, with any token, you have to look at it over time. You can't just go, I'm going to buy this and forget about it, and it's going to be worth more in 10 years. Because there's a chance that coin might not exist in 10 years. You might have those coins. Just like I have Hashcash somewhere and on a hard drive, doesn't mean I can use my Hashcash. You know, the Hashcash network is no longer there. So those tokens that I have are absolutely pointless. They're unmovable, unusable, and even the wallet is not even usable. So I can't even access these tokens. I can just look at their data. And that is the ultimate fault of some investors, is they think that, well, this is like a stock. But at the same time, you can't even treat stocks like that nowadays. There's too many times where stocks fell. Even stocks that have never fallen or fell for like 50 or 60 years within the past 5 years have been going down. And this is a real scary point. And so at any point in time, you should be value cost averaging and dollar cost averaging, which, if you don't know what that means, dollar cost average, most people do. That's where you take the number you have, divide by, okay, what do you have, what it's worth, and you divide it by what you pay for, whatever, and you find, okay, I've bought this much at this value, this much at that value, all together, you divide it and you do your math. Or actually, there's a few different websites you can go to find your dollar cost average. So please just go to pre-search and type in dollar cost average website, and put dollar cost average in quotes and see what you get, because those sites are going to help you out better than someone just trying to do this by hand with what I just said, because I didn't really explain it that well. And value cost average is where you take the amount of time it took to receive those coins. A lot of times that means you're not actually paying money, you're taking your time effort into it. Maybe you shared one link one time and you received 1,000 of these tokens, where your value cost average is next to nothing. But say you had to put out 1,000 links to receive 1,000 tokens, well, then your value cost average is 1, you know, because it'd be 1,000 links, 1,000 tokens. But at the same time, that might not be completely true. You might have received 500 tokens for one referral in one location one time, and then all the other ones didn't really receive a whole lot. You know, amongst all the other 1,000, you only received 500 more tokens. So you really have to pay attention to what you're doing, how you're doing it, and the token, the exchange. I mean, every little thing matters. But just like that, this outro was sponsored by 3dbtclist.com, where it's been newly decentralized to where it can be taken down with less than 1% possibility. That means there's less than 1% possibility this website can be taken down. And with that, if you just look on your screen, if you're on Anchor, you can go ahead and click right there where it says 3dbtclist.com. Go directly to the website. You can download it to your device, your hard drive, your computer, and you continue using it. Or you can just go there every day and collect your crypto and get it for free. You learn different ways to get crypto, different websites to earn it, and different things like that. Because it's about time you take control of your money.